located at 2728 Southeast Ankeny, serving local coffee and baked goods every day from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Lunch was provided by Cannon's Rib Express, a rib and sandwich counter with patio seating, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue. Dinner was provided by Kuya's Cuisine, a Filipino restaurant located inside the Filipino American Center of Portland at 8917 Southeast Dark Street.
Anyone who is familiar with the struggles of labor knows that song is an integral part of the battle. I'm Don Jacobson, and on Moving On, Friday, September 9th, 12 noon to 1:30, I will be presenting music for and about the labor movement. Pete Seeger, John McCutcheon, Utah Phillips, Cy Conn, and Magpie are just some of the artists that will be featured. There are a limited number of the new 2-CD album by folk icon and social activist Joan Baez that will be available as a thank you gift for your contribution. Tune in Friday, September 9th, 12 noon to 1:30, only on KBOO.
Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
The time is 11 a.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And welcome to our very special edition of The Digital Divide on KBOO. Today we're very fortunate to have musician, author, composer, general Renaissance man, John Shirley, live in our studios. And it's not so much that you can't pin a label on John, it's that so many are appropriate. He writes fiction that is uniquely his own. It's been labeled as science fiction, cyberpunk, noir, horror, postmodern, literature, suspense, fantasy, dark fiction, and more. He's a television and film writer, a lyricist for bands such as Blue Oyster Cult and DC Moon, frontman, musician, essayist, and all the labels are appropriate, but no single one is enough. And we are pleased to have him live in studio. We also have our guest host, sometimes guest host Randall Irwin, who harkens back to those early club days where the punk movement was founded in Portland, and John was instrumental in forming that movement of punk music in the early days. So I am going to go ahead and turn over the mics to Randall and John. Take it away.
Hey, John.
Hey, Randall.
So what do you want to talk about today?
We should divide the digital.
Well, here's the thing. Before we get started, I just want to welcome you back to the Pacific Northwest. You have you've lived in San Francisco and where? Los Angeles, New York, France, someplace.
Yes.
And now you've recently returned back to the homeland, the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Any kind of culture shock in returning back to the old world?
I have bought a house with my wife, Mickey, in Vancouver, just over the river. And we're getting used to Washington State. And I had some culture shock the other day when I saw a guy in a paramilitary outfit with an enormous Glock strapped to his hip in a convenience store. And he was pacing back and forth nervously and sort of chattering to himself. And then he said, no, 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 I mustn't eat this kind of food. And then he ran out. And you know, it made me a little nervous. You have open carry in Oregon, but by the way, I looked it up. But we didn't have it in California. So I'm not used to it yet.
Well, that was my mom at the convenience store, by the way. But that's okay. Chamber, she's often mistaken. Yeah. And well, it sounds like we're moving closer and closer to a John Shirley novel, the way things are playing out here.
Yeah, it's a little like a song called Youth, yes.
Yeah. So you, back in the 70s and the early 80s, you were instrumental in the setting up the punk scene here, the DIY music scene here in Portland.
That was me singing at the beginning.
At the beginning.
And you're Johnny Paranoid.
Yeah. And you you had John Shirley and the Monitors was, I loved that band.
I wish we had recordings of it.
Yeah.
It was a really good band, yes. And that's one of many that sort of melted it's one of many that sort of melted like the Arctic ice in global warming. The band melted away and flowed under the bridge, and I was in two or three others. I played at CBGB, and then I was in bands in a kind of a more post-punk range, you know, like funk rock.
Mm-hmm.
We called it futuristic funk was what we did, because we had kind of futuristic subject matter. And it was, but with a funk thing happening, and it was more developed musically in some ways.
Was that the Panther Moderns, for example?
That was actually a band called Obsession, and then I was into Panther Moderns, which was more of a very dark prog rock project. And now I'm in a band called the Screaming Geezers.
Yeah.
We're, you know, I'm getting that together up here. I did play in it in the Bay Area, and I brought the name of the band with me. But there are screaming geezers everywhere.
In my nightmares, there are. No, I want to. That sounds great, though. Now, is there more than one screaming geezer in the band, or?
We're all older people.
Oh, okay.
Alec Burton was in the band The Confidentials. He was in Sado Nation, actually. He was the drummer. He was in lots of bands, and Brian Lee was in Poison Idea at one point.
Oh, yeah.
There are many iterations of Poison Idea, and he was in the Cleavers, and he was in many other bands. So we're all
what fun.
The howling elderly.
So but have you had a chance? I mean, you've only been back here like a couple of months, really. Have you had a chance to go back and look at some of the old haunts, the ones that are remaining? Some of the old venues or the places that were venues that you used to play, and you can't go to Quality Pie anymore. It's gone.
Oh, God, I'd forgot that. Those kind of places.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to go to, I think, you know, Denny's sorts of places and at after the shows and be there at 3 a.m. Eating, you know, pie and eggs and you know, just generally waiting to get thrown out, and it always happened by 5.
did you ever lock any of the waitresses in a closet, for example,
and no.
While you tried to tell the entire restaurant about nuclear?
No, that was something that happened to one of my a poor lady who was my teacher, and when I was in high school, and she was bending over in the closet, and it. Of these classroom, and I just closed it for a moment. She was a friend of mine. I just thought it was amusing, but she, not being an adolescent, didn't think so. And then the principal came by and heard me ranting about nuclear war and how all the kids were going to die, and she was pounding on the door. So he came in it all came to a crashing halt. Like civilization.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about your writing.
Well, you say that as if it's a question. Is it writing? Can we really say that it's writing, John?
Words on paper. Well, no, because you know, I knew you as a as this, you know, one of the cool punk guys in town who ran the good shows and had a great band and put on a really good show and got people involved. I didn't know at the time that you were writing amazing science fiction, cyberpunk, horror stuff in the background. Which was your day job? Was it the music or was it the writing?
It was definitely the writing. It was my day job to pay for bands. So if I got an advance from a publisher, I bought equipment or paid for a recording studio time. And so that's especially in New York. That's what I did, you know. We did different things to survive. The lady I lived with at the time, did some very, very special sorts of dancing off Times Square. And I wrote paperback novels. Paperback writer. Do we have to pay the Beatles? No, I guess not. Not the way I did it. Well, anyway, that's what I was. I published science fiction and some kind of what I think of as allegorical horror. It was... But it was a little different than the usual fare, let's say.
Well, let's call it allegorer then.
Allegory. It was allegory. Yeah. But it was, I tried to make it meaningful. It was always a social statement in some form, but only slightly disguised.
Well, I read a nice quote where I think it was Booklist. I said that Shirley... serves up the bloody heart of a sick and rotting society with the aplomb of an Aztec surgeon on Dexedrine.
One of my favorite quotes.
Mine too.
And that means they actually liked it. This may need some decrypting, but yeah, that was actually a positive thing to say.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
not everybody might think so, but it meant that he liked it. One guy though at Kirkus found my stuff too disturbing and said in the review in Kirkus, there are people who suck his lollipops of pain? ? And so
Where do I get mine?
I always wanted to actually make up some lollipops and have like a little label and give them out, John Shirley's lollipops of pain, and give them out with samples of the books and the quote and everything. mostly I got good reviews.
We've got some special thank you gifts here today. And one of them there are some signed copies, proofs of Heat Seeker, which is a beautiful collection of your stories. What can you tell me about Heat Seeker?
It was my first story collection, and it has an intro by William Gibson, author of New Romancer, a very principal modern author then and now. And Stephen P. Brown, who was the editor of Science Fiction Eye, came out from Scream Press and then went into other editions. It was some of the earliest, really clearly identifiable cyberpunk stuff, much of it. I'm told that by a mutual friend that Lou Reed was a fan of it. I quoted him right away. In fact, originally it was called Wild Child, and there were lyrics from his song, Wild Child. Well, in this case, it was...
So what we have here today, this is not a copy, a store copy of the book. We actually have an amazing... we have a couple of proofs, which is they're unbound printed pages with handwritten notes, some of them from before the book came out.
And these are collector's items.
They certainly
are. They're you can't find these. They're also kind of a little time capsule for the early 1980s and the way that science fiction and
progressive science fiction and cyberpunk, as it was kind of prototypically forming then, were emerging. And so it was like part of that whole stream of things is very influential. It was influential, this, not just this book, but people, things like it that were coming out at the time, influential in, for example, manga and anime that came out afterwards. I mean, Bruce Sterling's work influenced manga and anime, and he and I were closely associated in those days. So I think it is a really critical little piece of collector's material that you just can't find any place else from that era. And I signed it, right?
I saw you do it.
And so
it was you with a pen.
It will make a good thank you to somebody making a donation to KBOO.
It will. So we've got three of those different sorts. An author's proof, which is I guess it's like the what they give to you to verify the contents,
right,
and things. And then there was an editor's proof or a printer's proof,
mm-hmm,
which is, it includes some of the original graphics that were in the novel.
Yes.
And it has a lot of handwritten notes,
yes,
about the colors and spacing of and fonts and things.
And yes, and the original
fascinating
graphics by Harry O. Morris. It's not his original art, but it's the art that was used in the book reproduced here. And it was like the first I had seen of that art. And it was, at the time, very innovative stuff. It was because he was using computer art in programs in its early form, along with drawing and kind of a special method of collaging. And now that's everywhere. People do that everywhere. But at the time, it was still very innovative and new. So people into graphics and the history of graphic art should be interested in that.
And anyone who wants to read a series of damn fine stories. And then the other thing we have here that you've kindly provided and signed is I guess this is also an author's proof.
Yes, it's a bound. What do you call it?
Comb binding.
That kind of binding, and for really, 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 really weird stories. And I don't mean that in some kind of category sort of way. I mean, that is the title of the book.
Well, it is, and that's the way the book's laid out. You've got four chapters, right? Really weird stories.
Four sections. Each section is, first there's really weird stories.
Uh-huh.
Those are really weird. Then
they
there's
are really
another
weird
section, really, really weird stories. And then there's a third section, really, really, really weird stories. And then there's a fourth one, which, guess what, has really, 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 really weird stories. And I tried to do them, you know, I wrote them all separately, and then they were published in anthologies and magazines, but I tried to do them, to organize the book so that it was exactly like that ramping up of bizarrity. And yet
you do that very well.
It's all, I ramp up bizarrity, but it's all very organized. It's all very, like, each story is internally logical in a kind of insane sort of way.
In an insane sort of way.
Which is, may seem contradictory, but that's the whole point is reconciling those two extremes.
And then what can you tell me about the other gift you've kindly provided there's another one that is Nothing Can Stop Me Now, and that's a kind of a graphic novel that includes one story that you wrote.
Right. And it's a graphic anthology of different people who are illustrating, writing stories based on Nine Inch Nails songs. So if you're a fan of Nine Inch Nails and Reznor, that's the origin of that book. And I have one of the stories in it.
Okay.
And I can't tell you what the story is about, but because it is, you know, it's that song.
Okay, let's let them do their stuff now.
And welcome back to Membership Central. And I am here, where's
Where's that mic for my friend out there in membership land? Where is that? Okay, well, we need to find where that is, so we're going to go ahead and put a little music on. That was just another day.
Just another day. Oh, it's just another day.
Back.
That's right. Not today, devil.
Just a little minimal chaos. But what would the first day of membership drive be without chaos? It would be the second day of membership drive.
Or maybe the fourth or fifth. That's by right. That point.
Well, we are so excited that you are tuned in to the Digital Divide today with John Shirley in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we are offering, or John, really, John has donated some one-of-a-kind.
Yeah. Artifacts.
Literally artifacts. They're authors and editor proofs of Heat Seeker's first cyberpunk novel that was huge and really kind of like the second generation of cyberpunk after William Gibson.
Well, I want to let everybody know, as we tantalize you to collect this amazing stuff, to call 877-500-5266. That's what you need to call in order to obtain these rare treasures and beautiful artifacts. And in any case, John Shirley, the Digital Divide actually brings in a number of amazing people, right?
Well, it's true. We've brought you Cory Doctorow, Howard Bloom, a good friend of the program, Robert Mirapol, Neil deGrasse Tyson, George Dyson, one of my personal heroes, Howard Rheingold, and today, author and punk legend John Shirley. We brought you Truth Dig editor-in-chief and journalist Robert Shearer. You might know him from Left, Right, and Center. Also, he's the founder and editor of Truth Dig. That's his website. Mm-hmm. And we've kept you up to date on Edward Snowden. What's that phone number?
It's 877-500-5266. And you can also donate online at kboo.fm. I mean, we support free thought. We support these discussions amongst people who are thought leaders in digital technology and the intersection of that between science, environmental concerns, health, and metaphysics. Okay. And so support this program, support KBOO in its quest for deeper understanding. 877-500-5266.
So here's the deal. Here's the bottom line, peeps. our goal for this program today is $300, really a modest goal.
Oh, yeah.
We're offering you these amazing thank you gifts. So let me just tell you what we need. It'd be great for
let's just put it this way.
For $120.
$120.
For $120 donation, you just call that number, which is
877-500-5266.
I know, it must be right in front of me.
It's just to your right. It's cool.
There it is. And right, so for $120, you can have one of those unbound proofs of Heat Seeker that was released in 1989. These are all signed by John.
Mm-hmm.
For $75 donation, you can have the hard cover sealed book of Nothing Can Stop Me Now. Short stories inspired by the songs of Nine Inch Nails. And this is a fancy, hard-to-find book. It's not necessarily available in any bookstore. It's hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
And John has donated that to us. And then One signed and bound, this one actually has binding, comb binding, proof, it's the author's proof, of really, 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 really weird stories. And it says, John Shirley's really, 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 really weird stories slip out of the constraints of whatever labels have been put to them, science fiction, fantasy, horror, erotica, suspense, and into its very own special, indefinable, extraordinary literary universe. Now, for $15 a month donation,
yeah,
for $15 a month, EFT, you can have that. That's $120. That's a little over $120. Or you can just call and put on your credit card and take one of these collectible rare thank you gifts, mm-hmm, that John has donated of the cyberpunk books that he wrote, right, decades ago. That you can have one of those in your collection to cherish. Because it's a very special thing.
Exactly. 877-500-5266. And you could donate
Help us make that call for this program.
Exactly. I mean, this particular item, the weirdest, the really, 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 really weird stories. Did I have enough? Really? I think it's enough. That has some pretty amazing graphic elements, if I heard John correctly. It has really cool collage. I mean, this should actually be in the Library of Congress. If you call 877-500-5266 right now, you can have a piece of history. Join KBOO right now.
And we're going to go back to our live in-studio interview starting now.
Well, there you have it, John. They've served you up little pieces of history. Now, so what I'm thinking about is here. So you were writing science fiction stories back in the 70s and the 80s, and you continued to do so. But you're writing back then about things that were far into the future. So what I'm wondering is, how does the technology and our culture of today compare with things that you wrote decades ago about the future? Meaning, for example, are there technologies available to us that you envision to be much farther into the future, or are we culturally closer than expected to the dark and broken world you've envisioned? And I'm particularly thinking about your TED talk with the false singularities. Where's the world today compared to the world you wrote about that was supposed to be in the far-flung future?
Well, it's right on the edge. It's right on the edge of it. We're almost there. We're almost there. People say that the internet was not predicted, but actually it was by different people. John Brunner predicted a version of it. In my books, the song called Youth Trilogy, I predicted something I called the grid. And it was basically a sort of Wi-Fi internet that much of it through connectivity in chips that people had in their heads. But it was the same concept. And then also there were other kinds of communication going on that were more like the conventional World Wide Web. And this was like before that thing happened. So, you know, we did envisage it. There was, going way back to Aldous Huxley, long before modern science fiction, in Brave New World, he described a world that was organizing itself to towards a form of practical eugenics, where people were genetically altered, where genetic engineering was a normal thing. And it was a nightmare in his book. It was a dystopian description as to, because it was being abused as a sort of a case system to keep everybody in their place. And at the same time, in order to keep people from protesting that, they were given Soma, which was some super tranquilizing drug that made it possible to go on. Well, those things are possible now. It wouldn't surprise me if they started working on some form of it in some other countries. I won't say which ones, but
I'll say it for you.
I'm thinking of a certain very large country that might consider one of those things. In terms of there are rumors of genetic experiments going on with genetic engineering that could be applied to the general populace, and then there. We have barely begun to experience what the impact of new pharmacological tinkering will be. We'll have drugs that make us feel stimulated but not overstimulated, relaxed but not over-relaxed, friendly but not over-friendly, and they'll be tinkered with to fit our DNA type, but... they can be obviously used for social control. And even those drugs, refined as they are, would probably have withdrawal symptoms if you took them away because the way our brains are structured. So in order to simply keep people demanding them and providing, and to keep them provided, it could be threatened that if your community continues to rebel, we will take these away. And everybody knows what the suffering is like. And they'll be raised on these things, maybe. Especially like look at the way that OCD drugs and ADD drugs and ADHD drugs, especially the latter, are used on children now. And the way children are lavished with pharmaceuticals that much of the time they don't need. They're starting to use antipsychotic drugs on children who are like 9 and 10 are basically behaving the way I did when I was 9 and 10. They're just slightly troublesome, a little bit outrageous, but really part of the normal range of childhood behavior. But people are starting to get prescriptions for them, for their kids, of antipsychotic drugs. And that whole Aldous Huxley feel, and it was also described by other science fiction writers, Greg Bear, I think, and others, is starting to come true. And when we see the inundation of new drugs constantly on television, they're offering more and more iterations of these things, and we don't really seem to care that they mumble at the end of the advertisement, may cause your head to explode. We buy them anyway, some of us. There's a tremendous problem with a growing problem with drug dependency that is entirely legal. Some of it, sometimes people need antidepressant medications. Sometimes people need even opiates, legally, because they have severe chronic pain. They're cancer patients. But there are going to be new pharmaceutical drugs that are so refined you can't even envision them now, really. You can barely imagine how effective they're going to be. And they're going to be terrifyingly effective and terrifyingly hard to resist.
Well, yes. And you've written basically from the very beginning, many of your stories are filled with this notion of the reward pathway manipulation.
Yes.
And recently I've seen you've written some things regarding social media as another one of those addictions that rewards that manipulates that reward pathway.
Yeah, there have been studies recently it was also reported in the television show Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
They did a little segment on it. It seemed right to me. Basically, how vulnerable we are to manipulation of our neurological reward centers, the pathways that collect to the pleasure centers that release dopamine and other hormones. We can be easily, fairly easily enslaved through these pathways and these areas of the brain. And we talk about it all the time. We talk about gambling addiction, and we people go to casinos and we watch them working the one-arm bandits and the new variations of those, and we shake our heads and say, oh yeah, they're addicted. But what is the mechanism of that addiction? It's the same mechanism that is used over and over again in the development of new smartphone games, starting Candy Craze. What is it called? I don't play these things. Angry Birds, but
well, I don't either. So you can call it whatever you want. I won't even know.
The one
Candy Birds.
Crazy birds.
Angry people.
Crazed angry Candy Birds yeah. games. But there's a whole, there's a whole area. There's a whole subgenre of gaming that is of that kind, and it is designed in accordance to the way people respond to stimuli and certain specific stimuli, designed by a guy in Scandinavia, actually, who used neurological studies to design a lot of these games. They use these reward pathways, they addict people to them, and people have to pay in order to get higher levels at the games. So it's a frightening vulnerability, and we don't really understand normally how our neurology connects with our technology. And that's what we're coming to, is like we're a confrontation with how our nervous system is vulnerable to our technology if we are not conscious in our use of our technology.
Now, that's a beautiful thought. But do you follow, do you look at quantum physics at all?
Yes.
So where, in a way, you also have these scientists and other philosophers who are saying that our neurology is impacting our technology, that we have the ability to change outcomes of certain scientific things with our intention.
Well,
so it's a kind of an interesting playoff of if the technology is affecting our neurology, and at the same time, these guys are revealing that we may have the ability to affect our technology with our neurology, with our...
Yes, it could happen through quantum computing, perhaps, which is a whole new school of computing. Experiencing breakthroughs in the last 2 years, quantum computing, and it's not an easy thing to explain or to understand, but it accelerates the speed of computers gigantically. But also, since you have this spooky action at a distance response and this supposed Heisenbergian connection, if you observe something, then you have affected on the quantum level. Theoretically, you might be able to apply that to quantum computing and your interaction with a quantum computer, so that your thoughts are instantly realized, maybe in a 3D printer somewhere. I didn't mean to materialize that, Mom. I'm sorry. I saw it in a magazine, and it's all wrong. I'm sorry. I'll dematerialize it.
I read about it in a John Shirley story, and look what we've wrought. After they're going to go to a break here in a little bit, and after that, I'd like to talk about films. But before we go to the break, let me just ask you very quickly, of all the things you've ever written, what's your favorite and why?
It's always my latest one.
Uh-huh.
Whatever I've just finished, I'm very enthusiastic about. And then later, about 2 years later, I'm like, okay. But this one, and so on.
Yeah.
So
you've got a book coming out.
Well, I have a new novel called Stormland, and my agent has submitted it, and it is out there in New York, and I cannot talk about the publishers right now because negotiations are sensitive and so on. But it is out there, and it is about a city in the United States, an area where There are storms 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, year after year, with only like little lulls between that are themselves low-grade storms. And so it's destroyed most of the cities in the area for the most part. Yet some people live there for their own reasons. Because they're hiding from something, because they have something special they want to get done there that they can do without surveillance. So it is a strange little community and a sort of parable about the future world. And this the Stormland is just a pocket example of extreme weather in the future, arising from global warming and climate change. I believe this kind of thing will happen, not as extremely as I've described it, but it's really a dramatic setting, Stormland. And so it is very cyberpunk. It's kind of a fusion of cyberpunk and, I hate the term, but cli-fi is what they've been calling it.
Cli-fi.
So it's climate fiction confused with cyberpunk, and also a kind of detective mystery set in the future, the near future, your future.
Can't wait to read it.
And we're going to jump out to Membership Central again. Thank you, John and Randall, and we will be back with you
Hi.
Shortly, in just a few minutes.
Here we are.
And I'm Rabia, and I am with Rebecca today.
Hi, everybody. So it's time. It's time.
It is. It's time to make that phone ring and make a donation. Actually, you know, most of the special one-of-a-kind thank you gifts in the form of editor and author proofs today, we are asking for a $120 donation. That is $10 a month, EFT. Mm-hmm. It comes right out of your bank account. And check it out, okay? I just want to put some things in perspective. We're like, hey, we need $120. Well, we're going to give you this amazing thank you gift for $10 a month. And AT&T, their total contributions to, say, I don't know, the Republican Party are $2,875,000.
Holy cats.
Google's contributions to, how about this, the Democratic Party, $1,500,000. And we really help out if you call
877-500-5266
and sign up for a $10 a month EFT, or put $120 on your credit card and take one of these incredible one-of-a-kind thank you gifts that we're offering you only during today's program. And they are, again, two unbound, well, actually three unbound signed proofs signed by John Shirley of Heat Seeker, mm-hmm. released in 1989. One of those is an editor's proof. And that's for $120. And you can get that 877-500-5266. We've got Nothing Can Stop Me Now. Short stories inspired by the songs of Nine Inch Nails. It's a sealed hardcover book for a $75 donation. And one signed author's proof, comb bound, actually has binding, of really, 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 really weird stories. The Weirdest of the Weird, The Strangest of the Strange by John Shirley.
So call us for endless treasures, not simply the ones that Rabia listed to you, but the treasure of having the ability to talk about the intersection of psychology and technology. Just what Randall and John have been talking about, that is an important exploration of how media affects us psychologically. You know, this commodification of, you know, the way that we play games.
Of everything.
It's just indicative of sort of the state of the world that we live in. And I know that you as a listener are looking for more information, more ways to talk to people about it, learning a vocabulary and a new way of communicating your concern and your interest in taking a look at that, in breaking those like patterns of, you know, conformity. 877-500-5266 is the place to call for the support of Free Thought in this way.
That's right. You know, together we are all walking uncharted territories, you know, in technological advances like artificial intelligence, and it's all brought together here on the Digital Divide. You're on KABU, your community radio station, 877-500-5266. And you know what? You're better informed because of KABU. That's why you turn on. Your world and the knowledge of that world continue to expand. And KABU is part of your own personal journey of knowledge, information, and music. So why not consider KABU your daily mind expansion experience? The only after effect being your ideas and opinions about the world and the people in it continue to expand, grow more flexible, more tolerant. 877-500-5266. Give us a call. Make the phone ring. Help us reach our $300 goal. Grab an amazing thank you gift. Your membership and your donations reflect your values. Your values of being fiercely independent. We know our listeners. We know who you are.
And we're all fierce.
Unfettered by corporate influence. Encouraging independent voices and points of view. And we are with you in exploring those new frontiers.
Exactly. If you support this fierce realness of talking about ideas, 877-500-5266 is the number, KBOO.FM. That's the place to go if you want to donate online. Help us reach our goal.
And back to our interview.
Well, all right. No, John, may I call you? May I call you John?
Well, okay.
Well, you know, because I lived, I speak Japanese. I lived in Japan for 10 years.
Yeah.
So there, I would have to call you Shirley John, your family name first. So Shirley John.
Oh, God.
You must be, yeah, I know. We had to go there. In fact, I think somebody put me onto that before we got started talking today.
Okay.
Well, here's what I want to know. So, you know, you've written a lot of stories related to the supernatural and the paranormal. Have you personally, John Shirley, ever experienced anything unexplainable along those lines?
Yeah, well, I don't believe in the supernatural, but the paranormal, well,
it
what is,
in you.
You know, I'm paranormal. I'm not, you know, I'm kind of a paraplegic of normality. I am a believer in you know, there being a higher higher supernatural, higher natural, I guess, higher natural that is an unknown group of laws and a refinement of nature, and we are going to experience it sometimes as the miraculous. And I have had experiences of telepathic connections that seem to me real, and some precognitive events. I'm extremely skeptical about people who claim to be psychics. I think if you have 10,000 of them, 9,999 are self-deceptive or frauds, but maybe there's one every so often. But I do think that we sometimes kind of accidentally turn on that hidden radio, and that connects with these mostly unknown frequencies. Just by our proximity to the certain refined fields that are in the world that we pass through. So we might have moments of cognition and moments of telepathy, and I have had a couple.
How did that work? I mean, what can you give some detail? How did it feel? How did it manifest itself?
Well, one time I was at a concert, and I was not stoned. And this is relevant. This is relevant.
No, this is supposed to be a true story, John.
If a person, no, I wasn't. I was just in the audience, and I wasn't yet. Maybe later I might have been. But the thing is that if you are under the influence of something, you've got to really parse your impressions and be very skeptical of what you're experiencing.
Sure.
It's very subjective sometimes. But I was there in a state of sobriety at this concert, and I was in the balcony, and then I had this weird clear picture in my mind. It was like somebody showing me a movie of a girl walking up to me, and she had a particular face and particular hair, and saying, "I just saw you from down below, and I just felt like I had to talk to you. I don't know why, you know, you just seemed interesting." And so I thought, "Wow, that's a weird little narcissistic fantasy I just had." So about 2 minutes later, that girl, who I'd never seen before in my life, walked up to me and said those exact words to me. And she had been down below and had seen me and said those exact words. And so,
so how did it feel?
Those exact words. And I was so startled that I didn't really follow up with her. I might have had a date or something. I don't think I did. I was like, and then she wandered off. But I was really stunned by this. This is like 30 years ago, but I really remember it clearly. And I've had different kinds of little precognitive experiences that came, you know, just with their own initiative. That's how I think it happens most of the time. So there is something there, but I don't think it's supernatural in a the usual sense. It is a higher natural that we don't understand yet.
Well, I like that. I like that idea. And then, of course, there are the UFOs, such that UFOs, as in unidentified flying clouds, unidentified flying airplanes that just at the right angle, and right?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. I mean, I've seen UFOs, and I kept watching them, I kept watching these UFOs, and they turned out to be, yes, a cloud lit a certain way, which then disintegrated as they. Wind hit it, an airplane that I was seeing sort of end on as it came at me, and then it appeared to be hovering, and then it turned, and I saw, you know, United Airlines on the side.
Yeah,
you know,
so right?
Those are the ones that I've seen.
Well, we've got just a few minutes left here in the interview, and I want to talk about, you know, you have in your song lyrics and your prose and your screenplays, you create such intense and vivid images and sense of place. And I know that you are a bit of a movie fan. You see a movie now and then.
Yes.
Have you ever considered making one?
Well, not as a director or something. I did make a 25-minute documentary with someone called The Spiritual Journey. That's just interviews with different unusual kind of outre people in spirituality around San Francisco. And we're going to put it up on YouTube eventually, pretty soon. But it was at some film festivals. And I made, I wrote scripts. I wrote The Crow, the first four drafts of The Crow. And then David Scow came on and he wrote some more, and we share credit. And so I worked in television writing scripts. But I haven't actually, you know, been there on the set yelling at people to do it again. And I would like to be part of an independent production. I have some scripts that are perfect for that. So I kind of am watching for that opportunity.
Well, yeah, and I'd love to just to see you take these visions that you work so hard to describe with your words and actually bring those into the real world in a filmic sense with lighting, color, tonality, all those kinds of things with a nice team.
Well, see, lighting and color, maybe. Tonality, that's too high a budget.
So what is your favorite film these days? Or favorite type of film?
I'll take this opportunity to recommend Werner Herzog's new documentary, Lo and Behold, which is, you know, very relevant to the subject of this show. It's Lo and Behold, Reveries of the Connected World. I think it's in theaters now, theaters. And we saw it as a streaming thing on television. It was really stunning, and it knocks you off center. And it was a great piece of work. I recommend that. I mean, I watch a lot of things that are just for entertainment, and I liked the craftsmanship of them. My favorite films, though, are really older films like Fellini's films and early Dad John Borman films and noir films.
Yeah.
Those are things I really like. I like it. You and I like John heart. Ford films and I and early Robert Mitchum films. And, I like things like that that have gravitas or hyper creativity that you find in Federico Fellini.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So I don't really see anybody like that right this minute. The Tree of Life, though, was an impressive effort, a very stimulating thing. That mm-hmm. film. That filmmaker is like a very brave, adventurous filmmaker. So,
well, thank you, sir. We're going to wind it down here a little bit, or a lot. But before we go away, if people want to keep up with what you're doing, your new musical efforts, learn about your books, is there a website or is there a place that you would like to send them that we can have them visit for? I know you're you're on Facebook.
Yes, I'm splattered onto Facebook, but I there is
Dark Echo still a viable?
The best thing is john-shirley.com, and then there's going to be a new website, but you'll be sent there from that, so you can. And meanwhile, there's the basic website there, john-shirley.com.
John-Shirley, and that's S-H-I-R-L-E-Y.
It's true. It is. My middle name is actually hyphen, so that's Noah.
I'm going to use that one. So if people go to johnshirley.com and they can keep up with, you've got so many books and they're constantly becoming available and accessible in various ways. You've got, links to all music like crazy. Anyway, thank you, sir. Thank you so much for coming into the Boo, to the KBOO studios, and talking with us today.
Anytime. It's great. I love this place.
And it loves you.
And thank you so much. I really appreciated listening to you, John, and I wanted to talk real quick about some of the stuff that you had mentioned, but I want to remind everybody that the phone number to call, 877-500-5266, it is waiting for you. We have some amazing treasures, but also I want to paint you this intense image and sense of place right now. We have phone answerers hunched over the phones, waiting anxiously, the sweat dripping off their brow, and waves of anticipation are coming off of them. You can cure this. 877-500-5266. Call now and hear about our amazing treasures and our amazing programming. Become a member today.
That's right. 877-500-5266. A $10 a month membership. Mm-hmm. So easy to do. You give a call. It takes about 2 minutes on the phone. And you can grab an amazing Proof of Heat Seeker by John Shirley signed. A signed edition released in 1989. You can get author's proof comb bound of really, 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 really weird stories, short stories. Or you, for $75 donation, Nothing Can Stop Me Now. This is a hardcover book of illustrations and stories inspired by the songs of Nine Inch Nails. And John has a short story in that.
Nothing Should Stop You Now. By calling 877-500-5266, you will be part of a rolling, amazing free thought steamroller that will change the environment and the world all around it, because you have bought into an amazing community of activists. 877-500-5266. I mean, this program in particular keeps bringing amazing thought leaders into the room and talking about how technology affects our lives and how it intersects with all of these other issues of social well-being, of environment, everything. So support this kind of thought. 877-500-5266.
That's right. When you're railing at the mainstream media, when you're just shaking your head and wondering how can these morons actually, be on the television or be in the news when they're not telling you anything,
think about KBOO. And, you know, that we're bringing you really unfettered realism in media. And the number that you can call to support your values that are reflected in our broadcast is 877-500-5266. You know, at this time, our country is, it's more polarized than ever, with ignorance and tyranny kind of clutching on for dear life. And but ignorance can be defeated with truth and action. So today, right now, take a stand for truth and take a stand for freedom of information. Ideas want to be free. Take a stand for facts and science and do that by dialing 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO today. Help us meet our $300 goal. Get an amazing thank you gift. Start a monthly subscription starting as low as $5 a month, $60, $90, $120 will get you one of these one-of-a-kind collectible thank you gifts. 877-500-5266. We only have about a minute and a half to go and a minute and a half for you to be able to take advantage of grabbing one of these really rare one-of-a-kind gifts.
I'm convinced that two of you can help call, or you will call right now and you can help us make that goal.
Ring at our bell.
877-500-5266 is the number to call right away. We are almost, we're there. We could be there. We are in another dimension of time and space where you are already a member, but we need you to enact it. 877-500-5266. Call now and be part of this higher natural that hardly anyone understands quite yet. And help us so that we can all understand. 877-500-5266.
That's right. Call right now. Our show's going to be wrapping up in just a matter of seconds, but you can still call and grab one of those thank you gifts. 877-500-5266. Give a call now. Become a member of KBOO. Support your community radio station. A community with a community radio station is a healthy community.
Thank you.
And a community without a community radio station is not a healthy community because they don't have that freedom of expression and media that is independent from corporate influence like you have here on KBOO. 877-500-5266.
Or KBOO.fm. Call now and support community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street Stomp, Saturday, September 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Clinton Street Stomp is an all-ages, unamplified, all-acoustic showcase of early roots music hosted by Zach Bryson. Again, that's Clinton Street Stomp, Saturday, September 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 South.